Welcome back to Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. So I am getting a lot of pushback on the fact that I said Baltimore City was like the wild, wild west. I said, I don't think there's a sheriff in town. I don't think we have any rules anymore. I don't think the law matters. I think you just do what you want and you keep on moving. 15 shootings this weekend alone. 39 homicides in 30 days. 232 and counting, folks. It is the Wild Wild West. And I am not saying that this is a good thing. I'm just saying it is the reality of what it means to live in Baltimore City at this moment. Listen to this. 17-year-old Beyontre Ellis was killed September 28th in the 1200 block of Druid Hill Avenue. 27-year-old Thomas Hamilton was killed September 30th in the 2800 block of West Belvedere Avenue. 24-year-old Abdullah Jallo was killed on September 30th in the South Calvert Street is what we have here. 32-year-old Randall Finney, he was killed September 30th, 4000 block of Balfour Avenue. 46-year-old Donald Lee Jackson, killed on September 30th, 3300 block of West Baltimore Street. That's only five of the weekend homicide victims. That's just five of them. That's why I say it's the Wild Wild West. Interim Police Commissioner Gary Tuggle has some solutions. Don't worry. The BPD is going to show up. They're going to ride through here. And these are the solutions he laid out. He's going to give you more cops because apparently that's what we need. He said for the next 3 days, any police officer, you can't go on any kind of leave at all because we need you in the streets. And by the way, when he said this, he also noted it's going to cost. Now, who's writing the checks? That's you and me. Let's understand that even last year alone, seven of the top 10 wage earners in Baltimore City, seven of them were cops, and the money came from overtime. The second solution that he laid out was they're going to do a Southern District community walk tonight. They're going to have the police go on a march so you can see their presence. And third, they're going to ask their federal partners to give them intel so they can identify the likelihood of retribution. He is saying that the only thing they can do right now is try to disrupt the violence. Folks, let's be clear. This to me does not sound like answers to what the ails are here in Baltimore City. I mean, yeah, there's solutions. Yeah, send the police on a march. Why not? Have more cops on the streets. Why not? Will that solve what the real problem is in this city? Because the real problem is not going to be solved by putting more police officers on the street. Now, that might lock some things down, but what about when we loosen up the police presence? What about on day four? When people who had some leave plan are able to go on it, what happens then? I don't want 3 days of safety in this city. I want to turn the corner so we can live in a safe city. There is a difference. 410-319-8888. I have Leon on the phone. Leon, how are you?
I'm doing fine.
Yes.
Dr. K?
Yeah, this is Dr. K.
Okay.
How you doing?
Okay. No, I couldn't hear you. Dr. K, I just called in just to ask a question. This question has come up before, and it may not be a solution to the problem, but it may assist. Baltimore is short of about 500 to 600, I think, police.
Yeah.
My question is, why don't we use the sheriff's department?
Yes. Yes, I know we had Brother Derek on hold. He hung up. I have questions about that. Who can come in to give us more bodies, at least to stop what we're calling about this wave of violence right now, right?
But the sheriff's department is already here. All we have to, I think, something, you know, not me, but give them the okay, to use the sheriff's department.
But my question is, if that's a simple solution, that makes sense, Leon. Why is that not being done? Like, that makes sense to me.
They already suited up. They got their guns and everything.
Come on.
You know? I mean, you're going to have a walkthrough tonight. Whatever they said that he's going to do it.
Yeah, Southern Community District Walk.
So you're going to walk through tonight, but somebody else going to be out there tomorrow night.
That's what I'm saying. He said he has suspended all leave for 3 days. That's what I mean. What's going to happen on day four? Because day four, they can take leave.
Right, exactly. You know, so basically, I would like somebody to ask the question, Why don't we use the Sheriff's Department police?
Why don't we use it? Why don't we? It sounds like a simple solution to me. Leon, thank you so much. Why don't we use the sheriff departments? We have Diane on from Southwest Baltimore. Diane, thank you for holding.
How you doing, Dr. K?
I'm doing well.
I'm good. I hope you had a good weekend.
Thank you.
That last caller was right. You know, every municipality in Maryland uses their sheriff department except for Baltimore City. And I always wonder why we don't use our sheriff department. All the other counties use their sheriff department to help out with the regular police. It's just not, you know, the sheriff by itself is with the, helping hands of the, the police. But I called, this weekend we had a Rose Parade, and then last night they was responding to a violent shooting in Pikesville. A woman is fighting for her life in Pikesville. But that shows you, and I was just talking to your producer, it shows you how violent Maryland is. Just not Baltimore City, but we focus on Baltimore City because they wanted to write that narrative to get it off the other counties. We live in a violent state, and it's just like what Donna said. It's a lot about, people, how they are living, how they are not living. And like she said, when you ask the children, because when I worked in Baltimore County, that's what I did. I got to know my children, and they told you some things that, you can't repeat because you hold it in confidentiality.
Right.
That's how you, get them to talk to you. Why are you so angry? Why is this and that? Because I don't have no food in my house. My mom's not there. Or if she's there, she's on her phone, playing these games and stuff. Children will tell you what it is. And it's not, it's not rocket science. I just found a report that I had, and it was about the national policy, the national agenda of public policies from 1996 to 2001.
Right.
And it talks about the issues and the action. See, we don't know about these public policies that is on the federal level, the state, or the local level. And then when it comes and it hit us, we don't know. It hit us like a ton of bricks, and we all are lost. And it's just not the person out there that's selling dope, but even a regular person don't know the public policies. Who put them together?
Right.
Who instrumented them? Which one of our senators went and voted on this? And then they don't come back in the community and let us know what it is, so we can protect ourselves and our children and our community. So we're not against the wall, because we just need to sit down and collaborate together. You know, I was telling your producer, I went to David Miller's fatherhood thing on Saturday at Pastor Hubert Brown's church, and I'm surprised it wasn't full, but I understand, because he was talking about fatherhood and the responsibility of fatherhood, and men don't want to hear that, and women should have been there too, because it gave you another perspective of what, a man should do and how a man should protect his home and his children and his community, But are we ready for that? That's what I want to know.
I don't know if we are. I'm not sure, Diane. I'm not sure if we're ready.
I think we could talk about
the problem. I am not sure if people are ready to do what it takes to solve it.
Because, the grandfather that emailed you that thing.
Yes.
And then you had the men that was calling in, and they were all upset. And I told you, they are not ready.
No.
They are not
ready.
They
were not ready.
This bleeding is going to keep going on until we stop and start doing things that we can do. We can, get the Nation of Islam to help us put security in our own community wall. Now, right now, they got the sheriff department down there where the young man got killed that Thursday down in South Baltimore helping out. Why can't they help out the rest of the
community?
All right,
I'm going to thank you there. Thank you so much, Diane. We have Nigel on the phone. Nigel from Northwest Baltimore. How are you, sir? Nigel, are you with us?
Yes.
How are you?
So I wanted to make some suggestions here.
Yes.
Is it possible for your show to invite the politicians, the sitting politicians? They're always available for the campaign time, but they never make themselves readily available on any show that I know of to bring the public up to date on what program that they are working on.
Well, I agree. Now, I just want to I'm going to say yes.
Successful.
We actually have Councilman John Bullock scheduled to come on tomorrow. We are inviting politicians. It is difficult during an election season because everybody wants to come on, right? But I'm thinking what we want, instead of just a stump speech, we want some real policies. What have they already done? And what are they currently doing? Are we on the right page, Nigel?
Exactly.
Right.
I agree. And one of the questions you might want to ask any one of them that comes on, what happened to the 21st century funding that was a big hoopla 5 years ago?
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
6 years ago. And now there is no word about it. Now we're talking about $3 billion. And I would assume that that includes the 21st century school funding. But it would be good if that could be unpacked, broken out, so that we know if they're really thinking about those things as far as near-term solving them versus not being able to get it done. And let the public know really, truthfully, like one of your callers say, you know, you got to really hit it right on the head and you can't be nice about it. You just got to go at it until we get the solution.
I completely agree with you. Thank you so much.
What's that?
Dealing with the 21st Century Fund and what is going to happen. We have Gene on the phone from Pikesville. Gene, how are you?
Yeah, pretty good, Dr. K. Gene of Pikesville, soon to be Mount Washington.
Oh, you're moving.
Yes, they accepted my bid on a property, so I'm moving down to Mount Washington.
Congratulations!
Baby. Yeah, well, you know, some people might not think that. Dr. K, you're talking about
Washington.
The Wild West, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, and so much talk about the sheriff.
Let me just say, when I said there was no sheriff in town, I was connecting to the Wild Wild West. Another caller said, why don't we actually use the sheriff's department? And I actually put that on the table because I don't know the answer to that.
Okay, well, here's part of the answer. Mm-hmm. You ever heard of regulators?
Yes.
Okay, regulators are like, you know, private policemen that you might have in your community, right?
Right.
The sheriff can deputize them. Okay, you ever heard of posses?
Yeah, I've heard of posses.
So when people get out of hand, break out of jail, back in the Wild Wild West, organize a posse, right? And
right.
The sheriff would deputize the posse, right?
Right.
Okay, so that's what the sheriff does. They can deputize us. You know, we have 500 police short, then deputize some people in the community.
And the sheriff's department can do that.
Can do that, yeah. So, you know,
So then the question that the caller had, because maybe you can answer this for me, why don't we use the sheriff's department? I don't know why we don't use the sheriff's department.
Well, we don't use it because the sheriff that we have now in Baltimore doesn't want to do it. He acquiesced to the police.
Okay.
And that's what David, the young man who's running for sheriff.
Oh, yes, who calls
that's what
lot.
He,
yes.
That's what he's saying. He's saying use the power of the sheriff.
Yeah.
So I'm voting for him. I just got my voting thing, too.
All right.
Okay,
we wish you well on your move. Thank you, Gene. You have one more comment?
Dr. K.
Go ahead. You have one more comment?
Okay, just one more thing in reference to drug testing. It's like, and so we talk about men not being in charge of their homes. Every man should drug test their children.
Mm. At what age, you think?
Yeah, 9 years old.
So what?
It should be a drill.
So at the age of 9, start drug testing your kid. You mean like the urine test and like checking them for like marijuana and all that at the age of 9?
Test.
Wow.
It's like and all it is to let them know that you're aware that they could go down the wrong road. You're a parent and you're in charge. And then because at 15 years old, you tell them that I need you to do a urinalysis test. They're gonna look at you and say, I ain't taking no urinalysis test. And then you know they probably using if they decide to, you know, to buck up and tell you that. Not because I did this with my son. You know what my son was doing this weekend and his girlfriend?
What?
Studying. They were studying. She's going to be a doctor and he's taking a program and he's going to be a person who does code. That's what they did this weekend.
Well, so you started drug testing your son at the age of... You started drug testing your son in third grade?
No, sweetheart. I started testing him when he was 14.
Okay.
But I'm saying they start using drugs at 9. They look at you with them little baby eyes, and they just look at you and melt you and say they're not doing something, and they are doing it. They're lying to you. They start lying at 9.
Oh, man. Thank you so much, Gene. So, folks, Gene has actually put something else on the table. Drug testing your kids at the age of 9 is what Gene is saying. Now, I guess Gene is saying if you drug test them at the age of 9, maybe that will stop the killings. I don't see the connection. Drug testing at the age of 9. I'm just going to go ahead and put that on the table, too. We're talking about the wave of violence that's been sweeping through this city over this weekend. 15 shootings in one weekend. 39 homicides in 30 days. So we have Apache on from Virginia. Apache, how are you?
Hey, how you doing, Dr. King? Welcome back. Can you hear me clearly?
I can hear you.
Okay, yeah, I'm a little, I'm a little sore, so excuse my voice. yeah, I'm a little outraged, Dr. King, after hearing I had a couple of solutions, you know, hopefully I'll get a chance to get to. But, you know, after hearing the interim chief or the acting chief, I'm sorry, acting commissioner, Tuggle, you know, comment, because he's pulling the wool over people's eyes, you know, and I can hear it in the commentary of the callers that they don't realize what he's doing. You know, now me being in that field, I realize what he's doing. I'd just like to talk about it for a second, and just two or three things that he said. You know, the first and foremost, you know, when he said that you can't control human behavior, you know, society enacts laws to control human behavior. The police are here in order to enforce those laws that control human behavior. And for a commissioner, the leader of the police department themselves, to make a comment like that, you know, that's not even a comment really a police officer would say, because that's essentially his job, is to control the wrong human behavior, right? You know, but for the commissioner to say that is as if he's reaching out for a pass and saying, okay, well, what can I do? No matter what you see from this point on, no matter how many people die, what can I do? You know, they're going to shoot, they're going to shoot. So he's basically trying to implant, you know, this idea of giving him a pass no matter what happens.
Right.
You know, I was shocked that he said that, be quite honest with you, but I'd be even more shocked if the citizens of Baltimore, you know, in the city itself, you know, people within the city aren't shocked and appalled by that comment by itself. But then when he said, you know, we're going to ask our federal partners in order to, you know, for help for intelligence, you know, unbeknownst to most people in Maryland, of course, I can only talk about things that's publicly known, right? But, you know, this is something that is publicly known. You can look it up, or you can have your staff to look it up. You know, Maryland has what's called a Maryland Coordination and Analysis Center, okay? It's like a fusion center where intelligence is shared through the federal government and state government. You can Google that. You can look it up. It's called the MCAC, okay? That for him to say we're going to ask as if there's an outside entity and he doesn't have those type of resources, he has more than that.
Right.
You know, that I know personally, he has more than that as far as intelligence. He doesn't have to ask for that. That's something that comes across his desk every day, the same way it does the president. So for him to even say that, you know, in the public, it's as if he's just throwing out smoke and mirrors. You know, to a law enforcement officer, to any Baltimore City police officer, they probably chuckle to themselves because they would know better, right?
Right.
But to any other law enforcement officer, the first thing that we're thinking, you know, would think was, well, wait a minute, don't y'all have what every other state has?
Right.
You know, but the public, for the public, they would buy into it. They would say,
we don't know.
Oh, well, okay. You know, they don't know. They're going to say, okay, well, you know, hopefully the feds help them. No, we in 2018. That kind of stuff is already in place. He should not even be saying stuff like that. He has those kind of assets, you know, available to him at a drop of a dime already. He's getting reports already. You know, so for him, my point is for him to even say that, you know, to put it
right
out there, it's
right
smoke and mirrors. You know, the overtime, the last part I want to say about what he said, as far as we want to bring more presence, right? You know, the question is, what was he doing before? You know, police officer in uniform in a police car is a presence patrol.
Right, right.
Okay, that's called a presence patrol.
I think you're talking about this march they're going to do. I don't know what kind of march they're doing.
Let me define it for you and for the listeners. They're doing the warm and fuzzy feel-good march.
Oh, yeah.
That's what that is, okay? It has no effect on anything other than to pacify the masses to make them think that everything's okay while we get this overtime. That's literally what he laid out. I'm putting it from in police language. That's what he laid out, okay? Because other than that, what he should have been asking for is what a couple of callers been saying. He should have been asking for other officers, you know, from other jurisdictions, you know, rather be state, rather be, you know, Baltimore County, rather be federal, you know, or rather be the sheriff's department. You know, all of them are able, if invited by him, or if the governor asks for implements a state of an emergency, or the city, actually, you know, state of an emergency.
I'm about to stop you there. Thank you so much, Apache. I appreciate you. Folks, I like what Apache's saying. Maybe it's time to call for a state of emergency. 15 homicides in one weekend, 15 shootings. I think so far, seven or eight of them have been fatal. 15 shootings in one weekend. 39 homicides in 30 days. Maybe it's time to call for a state of emergency. That's what the Wild Wild West looks like. Ain't no sheriff. There's no law. There's nothing. You do whatever you want. You shoot it up whenever you feel like it. You don't have to worry about anybody doing anything, saying anything, catching you. You don't have to worry about any of that. You just continue on your path, pull out your pistol, and do whatever you need to do. Hey, somebody cuts you off in traffic, go ahead and shoot them. That's what we do here. That's not working. That particular line of thinking is not working, but yet it's the reality. We have Charles on the phone from Southeast Baltimore. Charles, how are you?
I'm doing great. How you doing?
I'm doing well.
Yeah, I wanted to say that one thing that we have to do is change our political views. I think that the Democrats have really been pimping our vote, and if we change the politicians that's running the city, because once they get in there, they seem like they don't do what they've been called to do.
Right.
We give them our vote, and then they don't change the environment. If you look at places like Chicago, it's the same way. We have to be more independent, so they have to work harder for our votes. And then once they realize that we're not just putting up with this same old, these things like murder will begin to change. Yeah. That's something that happened in New York. You know, New York was primarily a Democratic city, but then they voted both sides sometimes. But when you have that kind of difference in your voting block, then they begin to work for you. You know, I mean, I think sometimes, you know, there's good and bad in both parties, but we have to be independent. They have to know that we're not going to just vote for you anytime you get up there for office, because look at what we're getting. It's like insanity. If you keep getting the same old thing, expecting something different to happen, that is insanity.
And that's what we are now. It's insane right now. It is. I like that you said that. Insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. It's a state of insanity right now in Baltimore City, Charles.
And it's so sad, because I used to be in the streets and stuff like that. And I changed my life over 20 years ago. And I understand, and I used to just always vote Democrat all the time. But I started seeing that we got to make them vote. Make them work for our vote.
I agree.
We have to stop doing this. They have to understand we're not going to just vote for you because you're a Democrat. Do what you're supposed to do. Change this environment in our city. Change the environment, and you watch what happens.
I completely agree. Thank you, Charles. We're going to hold it here for just a second, folks. When we come back, Nathaniel, Dwayne, Valerie, Brother Hockey, and Brown from Sandtown. We're going to take your call. I want to throw out something that Sandra Walker said. She said, you know, can the city be sued for our conditions? It should be. David Anthony Wiggins says people understand that the sheriff is pivotal to proactive law enforcement. We've got to do something, folks. We are in a state of emergency, and right now it's a state of insanity. We're doing the same thing. But don't worry, the police are having a march tonight. Maybe they'll do cookies and rap with us as well, because they ain't solving the problem. This is Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. Keep it here. We'll talk after the break. Welcome back to Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. So, we're talking about Baltimore City. We're talking about the violence that we have seen in Baltimore City. We're not talking about the violence from last year, although last year was a violent year in Baltimore City. We're not talking about the violence from 2 years ago, although 2 years ago it was a very violent year in Baltimore City. We're not even talking about the violence from this summer, although we had a very violent summer. We're just talking about the month of September alone, just 1 month. 30 days. We had 39 homicides in 30 days. See, over the summer, people were saying, well, we have all these homicides because, you know, the kids aren't in school. They don't have a place to go. Once school starts, things are get a little bit better. Folks, school has started and we're still seeing these type of numbers. 15 shootings in one weekend. This was not even a vacation holiday weekend. Just one normal weekend. 15 shootings. Wild, Wild West. We don't have a sheriff in town right now, folks. People are doing whatever they want, pulling off their guns, capping people however they feel like it, whenever they want, at any instance. We've already had two killings today, and it's not even 5 o'clock. That's the reality of what it means to live in Baltimore City right now, folks. If we sugarcoat it, then all we're doing is we're lying to ourselves. And I, for one, don't like telling lies, and I especially don't like telling lies to myself. That's the reality, and it's going to stay that way until we decide to do something about it. The politicians are not going to save us. They're not interested in saving us. We've got to save ourselves. 410-319-8888. I have Nathaniel on from Pikesville. Nathaniel, how are you?
Hey, Dr. K, long time, long time.
I know. Welcome back.
Hey, you know, Charles said it about those Democrats, but, you know, I'm glad I didn't have to say it this time. You know, you didn't hear from me.
Right.
Now, I don't think, to just one point that you're calling me, I don't think we should be asking children or teens what we should give them and what do they want and things like that, because I think if you ask a child that, you're going to get a childlike answer. And if you get an adult-like answer, then you shouldn't even be asking in the first place. You might as well just call into your show and talk to you.
Yes.
I think we should do some prison visits for, you know, for children starting at, you know, middle school. And this is just for fatherless kids.
Right.
If all of the dads are either dead or in prison, then, you know, why not bring some fatherless kids to go visit them and see if they can get some mentorship. Not like a scared straight kind of thing, but,
right,
you know, just some kind of, you know, some dialogue between them so that they can see that life isn't worth something there. And I like how you put it, and I had a question for you about the Wild Wild West thing. When you said it's like the Wild Wild West and the sheriff isn't in town, everybody's having a good old time. Do you see that as like a microcosm to like imagine the white man leaving, right? And mm-hmm. now he just left the state of Maryland to the blacks. You know, do you see some? You see some Wild Wild West activity going on there. I mean, if they just up and left and threw their arms up and said, look, we're getting out of here. You guys can have this place, you know. Or do you think we need, someone, I guess, standing at some position overlooking us?
Well, you know what I think? I think that when you take people and you oppress them, I think when you take their communities and the communities are underdeveloped, I think when you have a system of redlining, when you take the fact that Baltimore, according to Dr. Lawrence Brown, to use his terminology, is a Category 5 hyper-segregated city that's deeply economically divided. If you take that into account, well, yeah, if I just, you know, throw up my hands, I don't know what to do. No, you create it. The conditions that people are now having a struggle with. And because you created the conditions, then everybody who had a part in setting up these conditions should be a part in helping us get to some solutions. Because our communities did not get this way by themselves, and we did not create the structural conditions that allow our communities to move in the way in which they're moving.
Gotcha.
All right. Thank you so much. Oh, go ahead, Nathaniel. You have another question?
What do you think about martial law, capital punishment, and death penalty? You think that'll help curb the violence? Or
I think we need a state of emergency right now, where we need to figure out how to shut things down. Before we get to the death penalty, because I have some strong concerns around the death penalty when people are fighting for their lives in a city that in so many ways it feels like the city has given up on them. I'm wondering if there's a way that we can save our young brothers, not put them on death row. Because we have too many black men on death row already. How can we save them? How can we offer them another alternative? How can we help them to dream out loud? How can we help them put down the gun and pick up the pencil? Like, how can we do that? Because we can't stand to lose any more of our people.
All right.
All right. Thank you so much, Nathaniel. We have Valerie on the phone from Baltimore. Valerie, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you. Excuse me. Hello?
Yes. Thank you for calling.
Okay. Dr. K, thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to say, I say it every time, and I will say it every time we have this discussion. People must realize, again, and I keep saying that my volunteerism has taught me a lot about the kids in Baltimore City. And again, I was a court-appointed special advocate for kids in foster care.
Right.
These kids have no parents. So everyone's saying, you know, well, the fathers need to this. There are no fathers. There's no fathers. And the mothers that are there are doing what they can, some of them, and some have given up. How many times have we seen, okay, they, I've always used the young boy with who ran over the police officer.
I was thinking that. I was just getting ready to text my producer to get his name. Because didn't his mother make an appeal asking
his
the court, saying, I
begged.
Asked you to help me. I asked you to take him.
Begged. She begged. She even begged the judicial system to lock him up.
Yes.
She begged for help. There was no help.
I remember
so
that.
We have men calling in saying, I'm not going to put myself out there. I have my family. I have my kids. So if there is no one else, and again, you can talk to these boys, and they will tell you, I have no father. I don't even know what a father is like. You don't even know. They don't know what being a man is like. They don't even know what they're supposed to do. And then once they don't have any guys, they don't go to school, then they're in the system. They're in the system.
Right.
And this is their life. This is how they're going to spend their lives.
And that kid's name is Dante Harris.
Dante Harris,
we're talking about.
Dante Harris.
Yes.
His mom, it's not that she didn't love him. She didn't want
him. Well, she cried out for help. She said, I don't know what to do. Yeah, I remember that.
To die. But then people scarf at military school. But yet we have people calling here willing to put more police on the street and put them in jail. But nobody wants
death penalty, somebody said.
A military school. That doesn't mean they have to go to jail. It means that they're going to be surrounded by men who are going to teach them life skills, how to make decisions, how to cope, how to, and then actually learn what it is to be a man. And these are things that they don't have at home. Their mom can't.
Right.
She tries, but she can't do it alone.
All right.
But
thank you so much, Valerie. I appreciate you. We have Donald on the phone. Donald's a new caller from West Baltimore. Donald, welcome to the family.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you, Dr. K. It's an honor to talk to you. God bless you and yours.
Thank you. Thank you as well.
Just spoke. She kind of put on what I was about to say. Where are the parents of these young men and these young children? After all, these grown men and children, they weren't born in the stock. They didn't come out by the stork. They came by humans.
Yes,
my thing is, have they talked to their children? Do you talk to your children? My parents raised 4 boys and 1 daughter. And we were taller than our parents. We were bigger than our parents, but they were law. Not that we were afraid of them.
Right, I know what you mean.
We knew we
respect.
Were loved by them.
Yes.
And we knew somebody loved us. These young men grow up. These young teenagers grow up to be grown men on the street. They don't have no sense of fear because they don't have no sense of love. No one told them they love them or anything like that. Our young women have to be more protective of themselves. My thing is, you become a part of what you see.
Mm.
And I'm saying that to say this. Grown-ups, hold yourselves accountable in your communities because young people are watching you. You may not know it, but there are young people who are watching your reactions to things, how you act to each other, how you react to anything in your community. Your young people are watching you. And that's all I want to say.
I appreciate you, Donald. Appreciate you very much. Folks, just last week, I asked the question, who was responsible? I asked the question whether or not the older black men should be held responsible. I asked the question, and folks jumped down my throat. They were upset with me because I was just saying, hey, maybe we need the older black men to lean in. 15 shootings in one weekend, 39 homicides in 30 days. Folks, maybe it's a radical time and maybe we need some radical solutions. We have Brother Haki on the phone. Thank you so much for holding, sir. Brother Haki, are you with me?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Thank you.
Okay, I apologize. Thank you. Well, to answer Diane's comment about where were the black men. Actually, I was at Morgan State University. There was an awards banquet with a black billionaire, CEO Mike Roberts. So sometimes black men need to find economically ways to be productive, to get off the street. So that's why we listen to individuals who can give insights to that. But speaking on the crime and violence in the city and, how we can proceed forward. And I've listened to many of these different organizations and callers and politicians over the years. And my confidence level has continued to diminish. And so, for me, I am, supporting the aerial surveillance initiative over Baltimore City.
Mm. Oh, you mean bringing back those drone planes and taping everything we're doing? Those?
Yes, ma'am. Okay. I believe I've looked at a formal presentation, and I think that, you know, certainly, you know, Baltimore is at the worst it could possibly be.
It's real rough right now.
We need to look at some, express some radical solutions. And so I'm interested in, you know, understanding how technology can work both to protect us from police as well as protect normal citizens.
Yes.
You know, from, you know, crime and violence within our community. And I believe that this can act as a deterrent. And so we're going to have a press conference coming up soon. I'm not like the head honcho of this, but, you know, as a concerned citizen and, you know, recently elected in the city of Baltimore to not just, you know, council or anything, but central committee. But I believe that I'm going to exert, you know, some influence over this process and ask the tough questions. You know, leaders need to ask the tough questions and make a leadership decision, whether, you know, it adversely, you know, affect some people or people may have questions. That's fair and good. But, you know, we need real leaders that's going to come with some radical solutions.
All right. So, thank you so much, Brother Haki. Maybe that's the solution, folks. Drones looking over Baltimore City residents, recording what we're doing. You know what, Brother Haki? I'm not going to write off what you're saying. I'm saying we might need some real radical solutions. I don't know if people saw the movie New Jack City, but I remember they say we need some New Jack cops to take on New Jack City. Folks, we need some New Jack solutions for Baltimore City right now, because what's happening right now, it's not working. It's not working. We're moving in the wrong direction. We have Dwayne on the phone from Baltimore. Dwayne, how are you?
Just happy to be here, Dr. K. Just happy to be here. Now, Dr. K., you know, your most intelligent callers have already, you know, put out the obvious. Baltimore is under siege.
We are.
It's under siege. But here's the problem. We have not reached threshold yet. 15 is not enough.
As you know, Dwayne, you and I have had this conversation. You've said, you know, people are angry enough. They're not.
No, they're not. No, we have not reached threshold. Okay, that's why you question Brother Hakeem when he says aerial surveillance, because you haven't got to the point to where you like, screw that. A cop on every corner. I don't care if they're from Kansas. Get a cop on every corner. Get some air surveillance in here. Listen to our phone calls. See, when we get to that point, then things will change. But see, we haven't reached threshold yet.
Yeah, no, we haven't reached threshold. That's heavy.
Not enough pain yet. Because see, when we get to a point to where we want the violence to stop, no matter what the cost, no matter how many times you got to get stopped and frisked, if we're going to go down to 10 murders versus 250, 300, then that's what you'll do. But see, we haven't reached threshold yet.
Wow.
So everything that everybody's saying is great.
Yeah.
Okay? And everything that everyone has said is part of the solution, because the solution has many layers. But
yeah,
it's not
reach threshold.
Until we reach threshold.
You know what, Dwayne? I like what you're saying. It immediately made me think about what happens at the airport. After 9/11, they started to have you take off your shoes, your belt, your scarf, your jacket, and nobody complained. Everybody did it because we had reached threshold. Whatever
That's
it takes
right.
to make sure our plane doesn't blow up, then
That's
we're going
right.
to go. I mean, because who stopped flying? Everybody started flying, and you started taking your shoes off. And your belt.
That's right.
And your jewelry.
That's right.
And because we had reached threshold. You're right.
That's right.
Maybe, folks, that's the question here that we should have put out. Dwayne, I'm so glad you called. When do we reach threshold? At what point do we say, you know what, doesn't matter. Cop on every corner, drones in the sky, stop me when I walk down. It doesn't even matter. I just don't want 232 homicides in my city. I don't want to have to walk down the street and be afraid I might get shot. Dwayne, I appreciate your calls. We have Hamid on the phone. Hamid's a new caller. Welcome to the family, Hamid.
How you doing, Dr. K?
I'm doing well.
Appreciate you taking my call.
Absolutely.
I'm from Hampton, Virginia, so I have just a different perspective. I'm not from Baltimore, but I've lived here since 2011. And, you know, I work for the utility, the local utility, and, you know, I have to deal with a response to some of my guys going out into the field, getting robbed and getting shot while they're just trying to repair service.
Wow.
You know, and so we have reached a critical point where pretty much almost every other month, where either our contractor or our employee is getting shot or getting robbed.
Wow, just trying to repair something.
Just trying to repair something. So, you know, I was here during the riots. I was here during the Freddie Gray situation. And, you know, at one point in time, all the tension was on the police officers, you know, how they operate. And one of your callers made a good point. What if we got rid of the police officers, right? Are we even at a point as a people to really even be able to counter this problem on our own?
No.
Or
no.
Do we need to make some big cultural changes in the way that we live as a people? I understand that we have been oppressed, but I don't think oppression should allow you to allow yourself to fall a victim to corruption.
I like because, that. Is it time for a major cultural shift?
A major cultural shift. I mean, are we overly promoting and sexualizing everything? So then kids just grow up and then they don't have a relationship. They don't go into marriage. They're just having babies. If you're just having babies, then how are you going to have a mother and a father in a structural home? If that's not our culture, if our culture is not going in the direction of making us a better people, it doesn't matter who we have help us or who we don't have help us. It doesn't matter if we have white police officers or black police officers, or white judges, black judges. Our culture we need to try to reach a higher standard of living as a people.
All right. Thank you so much. I'm about to stop you there, Hamid. Thank you so much. We have Essa on. Essa's a new caller from Baltimore. Welcome to the family, Essa.
That would be Issa.
Issa, how are you, sir?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm glad you called.
Good. Good to be calling. My take is this. Black men need to stand up and be men and stop always begging for help to come to the community to clear it up in which they live.
Mm.
We become so weak and so misunderstanding that we won't even stand up against anything. Our families are attacked and we do nothing. So now we come up with these so-called imprisonment solutions as a plane in the sky, observing what we do
so
that now we can be overran again. If we start reading things such as Mein Kampf and understand that this is the same tactic that Hitler used when he overran the Jews in Nazi Germany. So we need to come on and wake up and be men and take charge of your community, protect your wives and your children, and be understanding that you are a problem. If there's shootings, stop them. Come out and stop them. Stop being afraid of what's going on.
I like that. Thank you so much, Issa. I'm going to have to stop you there because we're running out of time. I want to get a couple more calls. I'm going to try to get everyone in here. Brown, Paul, Leo Burris, Kevin, I see you. Brown from Sandtown, you're next, sir. How are you?
Doing good, Dr. K. Well, it's a big smoke screen.
Mm.
Politicians don't want to help, and the police department don't want to help.
Right.
We have to understand what's off the street. The gun task force, gang task force, drug task force, stolen car task force. Only task force on the street is the want task force, which move wee hours in the morning.
Right. Wow.
One of the solutions is, if they really want to help, start opening back up the call centers. Mm. That's not even being mentioned.
Right.
It was working. Then we have to look at the money that was rerouted out of Sandtown, the Federal Hill, where murders is taking place. They just beat a judge half to death down there over the weekend. Did you know that?
Yes, I know that. We were going to talk about the violence outside of just the shootings. Yes.
And see how they rerouted the money?
Yeah.
And our politicians know that the money was rerouted. They won't even speak about why they moved the money out of Sandtown into blighted communities. And if it's that bad, then the solution will be stop and frisk.
Yes.
But the good is not willing to make that sacrifice to catch the bad.
I mean, that is something.
You see, we can't have it both ways.
Yeah.
So the good's going to have to say, hey, look, if it takes them to stop me and frisk me for 10, 15 minutes to save a life, I'm willing to accept that.
Mm. All right, thank you so much. I appreciate you. So, folks, is that it? We're talking about the only way we can solve this problem is to give up all our rights. Stop and frisk, cops on every corner, drones watching us. Because apparently, just trying to talk to people and have intervention programs, that's not working. We have Miriam on the phone. Miriam's a new caller from Towson. Miriam, how are you? And welcome to the family.
Hello, hi.
Hi.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that it comes down to education, because that's the base of everything. People keep saying that the community was oppressed. There was, like, all these issues, but then what did we do to fix it? you, like, we always have this saying that it takes a village to raise a kid. It actually does. Because I remember when I was growing up, I wouldn't do anything down the street because I know if my neighbor got me, my mom will probably get me too.
Right.
So I think we need to go back to that mentality and to that group collectiveness where we actually have, like, we actually, everybody raising the kids, right?
All right. Thank you so much, Miriam. We have Kevin on the phone from South Baltimore. Kevin, how are you?
Good. How you doing, Dr. K?
I'm doing well.
You know what? I think that stop and frisk thing is a very slippery slope.
Oh, it is.
I've been saying this for a while. We've been through several mayors. I don't have to name them, and they all said that they were going or they were what they were going to do, and they all haven't. And I'm looking at the mayor that we have now, and she hasn't done anything. She looks just like the other mayor, as far as I'm concerned. And I don't think drones is the answer. You know, I think that you know what, this mayor, I think she should call in the National Guard until she has enough police officers and everything else. Otherwise, I mean, everything else is just it's not going to work. Drones are not going to stop shooting. You know, the police are only get there after it's already happened. That's all a drone is going to do is take pictures.
Right.
You know.
That's it. Thank you so much. I appreciate you, Kevin. We have Leo Burris on the phone. Leo, stop and frisk. Drones watching us. Is that what we're talking about now? Is that the solution?
No, hell no. No, it isn't. Apprenticeship, job training, and placement programs, the building trade, and building a renaissance Baltimore is one of the primary answers. We are dealing with desperate poverty, and these answers are not being addressed from the mayor or from the president of the city council with regard to job training and the priority.
No, but Leo, they're giving us, the police are marching tonight. Don't forget. They're doing a community march.
That's nonsense. They've been marching.
Come
I've
on.
Been watching Catherine Pugh march through neighborhoods for the last year, and it's good public relations, but it's not real. Auxiliary police are called for in the city charter. If that is the case, and Brother Richard Terry is the former head of auxiliary police, he lives in Ashburton. Why can't we get the auxiliary police mobilized? We did have as many as 110 police officers in the early 90s, auxiliary police.
So mobilize auxiliary police.
The sheriff is not going to do anything. The sheriff doesn't intend to exercise his right to train and deputize citizens, which he could, because he's a political patronage don for the Democratic Party. He's been sheriff for 35 years, and he's part of the operative, the in-house solution to doing nothing. Mm. And you've got to put him on the spot. He gets reelected, and he doesn't campaign for public office.
Let's see if we
can get him on the radio to talk to the people about what he intends to do and what we demand that he do.
All right. Thank you so much, Leo. We have Paul on the phone from West Baltimore. Paul, how are you?
Thanks for taking my call, Dr. K.
Absolutely.
Now, think about this. How is it that the city wants to stop crime, so they're willing to spend a whole lot of money to do it? Why can't they open up these recreation centers, man?
Yes.
It had everything that the child needed, like myself growing up. You had male mentors in there. You had coaches in there.
They give you snacks.
You had the women that worked with the young women, the females. You had computers in there. You had educational systems. You had everything you need. And I would like to ask this mayor, I mean, why would you want to put something in the sky that's going to cost us more money? The problem and the solution is we have to reach out to these young kids, putting a building somewhere in each community, letting the kids compete.
Yes.
If we go back to how we used to live, how we grew up under these recreation centers, it kept us out of trouble when we got out of school. We had somewhere to go. We had something.
All right, I'm going to stop you there, Paul. I appreciate you. We're going to try to get David Anthony Wiggins on. Welcome to the show. You're my last caller, sir.
Thank you. Good evening.
Good evening.
And that is why I'm running for sheriff, because the sheriff has to engage the people in their communities. He can deputize you to come out and engage these young men standing on your corner. He can help open up those rec centers. He can lobby for money for schools and rec centers and jobs, and he can get rid of some of these illegal aliens running around here on jobs so we can put American citizens.
We like to use the term undocumented residents rather than illegal
can call
aliens,
them what
yes.
you want. They're
yes.
here and they're taking jobs
right.
from black people that need jobs.
All
they're
right.
Taking...
I appreciate you, David. I definitely appreciate it. I'm so glad you called in. But until that happens with the election, what's one other solution you think we can do right now? I think David is gone. All right, folks, we're going to wrap it up for today. So we're trying to figure out where we go from here. 15 shootings in one weekend, 39 homicides in 30 days. That's why I call it the Wild, Wild West. I mean, folks, ain't no sheriff in town right now. It's doing what you want to do. We got to figure this out, and we got to figure it out together. I'm going to leave it right here for right now. Thank you for joining me and for sharing your drive time with us. Today with Dr. K is a production of WEAA. The show is produced by Justina Pollard. We have Deja here, our intern helping us today. Our board operators are Andre Melton and Ty Mack helped us. Stay tuned because up next is For the Culture with Faraji. Remember, folks, that here on Today with Dr. K, your voice matters. Your opinion matters. We tell stories that matter. We are here for you. We are listening because if it has your ear, you better believe it has our attention right here on WEAA 88.9 FM, absolutely the voice of the community. Make an appointment. Meet me back here tomorrow at 3. Let's talk all over again. And here's a final look from MTA.
And a good evening. Light rail link service is discontinued between the Timonium Fairgrounds and Hunt Valley stops through October the 4th. Local link bus number 93 is operating between the